Hey guys, welcome to the Parody Podcast Show, hosted by me, Rachel Evans, aka the Human Barbie, aka Margot Robbie Barbie Lookalike. Yay! And today we are on episode 6 of the season, and I just want to talk about a book that I've read from a long time ago. I'm going to synopsize basically the book, and then I'll just go through a few key bullet points. So it's this one. It's called 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, Powerful Lessons in Personal Change by Stephen R. Covey, and a foreword by Jim Collins. Okay, so it's over 25 million copies sold, and that's like, I've had this book for years. It's very thick. But one of the things that I want to look at is the foreword, which talks about fear-mongering, blame, victimization, hopelessness, lack of life balance, and things like that. And we can look at episodes or chapters in my life where I can take you behind the scenes and tell you what I was thinking and feeling at the time, like a reaction kind of video, but using an education kind of vibe from this book. So basically, fear mongering. The media presents a lot of fear mongering to people, like whether it's about, you know, allegedly World War III starting, you know, or what's happening in Russia, what's happening in the Middle East, or just anything to do with health or safety. There's a lot of sad articles in the media these days, and it's like part of the creation of fear mongering. So a lot of the time there is this theory that governments around the world will use fear to control its citizens. Now, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I do think there's no smoke without fire, but without going into any conspiracy, which I don't do, I look at the thought process of people and the access to information that we have on the internet. So for example, the internet can create fear mongering by people who are sick and they do self-diagnosis on the internet. Shouldn't do that. But we want to educate ourselves and have an educated guess as to what we have in our bodies, or what say, for example, if you're not well, or if you're thinking about dating and romance, we Google the hell out of everything, basically, guys, don't we? And I've been guilty of that in the past. So now I don't have the Apple News app on my phone. I refuse to look at the news app because it really creates anxiety. And what I want to say is I've struggled with anxiety all my life. I'm very American in my way, so I've been in therapy for it, you know, to manage my anxiety. But if you've got fear mongering in society and it's being channeled by the media, we really need to focus on things like this and eliminate that from our lifestyle, so that we don't have high levels of cortisol and stress, so that we can be anti-aging and look beautiful. You see, it's all part of your beauty regime not to follow the news too much and look at all the fear mongering. So that's the fear, the angle in the foreword of this 2004 edition of 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I want my eyeline to look up because all you see are my dark lashes, so I'll be looking up that way. Okay, the next thing is blame and victimization. Right, narcissists in life. This is not what the book says. This is my theory. I've studied psychology of narcissism because I'm an empath, and I attract a lot of narcissistic personalities in my life. There are the good narcs, the bad narcs, and the evil narcs. I attract kind of the good narcs, people who, you know, like my openness, my truth, my truthfulness, and my directness, and they work with it. But sometimes people in my life in the past have been, and even around me sometimes to this day, although I have eliminated a lot of narcissists out of my life, in the past I've learned lessons where if somebody was very snaky and they use blame and victimization, they would then use the narcissistic personality traits to control or to manipulate people. And I've been, you know, well, people have tried to manipulate me in the past, but it doesn't work, because when I find out that people are narcissists, out of my life. So hold on, guys, just let me do this, right? Coffee. Guys, I'm giving up coffee, but I have had one today. So, okay, we're going to look. I don't want to show my double chin. See, I've got insecurities too. Blame and victimization. Wherever you find a problem, you will usually find the finger pointing of blame. Society is addicted to playing the victim. Absolutely. And somebody would say something like, if only such and such wasn't so controlling, or if only I wasn't born so poor, or if only I lived in a better place, or if only I haven't inherited a temper from my dad, if only my kids weren't rebellious, if only the other department didn't mess up orders all the time, if only I wasn't in such a declining industry, if only, the if. Never do the what if, like when you speculate on relationships, and don't do the if and then. So I know a lot of people, like friends, who in the past who are no longer my friends, by the way. In the past, they play the victim and I'm just like so bored of it. Okay, so the next thing is eliminate fear out of your life. Don't watch the news too heavily. Look at the news once or twice a day and just only look at the news that reports like Reuters. I look at Reuters. Many of the Reuters news app, they've got the, is it the Thompson principles, where they only report non-biased and non-judgmental. They give you the facts and let you make a decision as to the angle of the story. Now, when I've worked with tabloids in the past, they will write a headline. The editor always writes a headline, right? So in 2004, I think I did the front cover of the Daily Mirror, blonde, skinny, no fake tan on, just pale skin, because I love my pale skin back then, it was a thing, and my bleach blonde hair and looking like Barbie, like a real Barbie doll in 2004. And my son was only like a toddler at the time, and the editor put slim and we hate it. There was two other girls who were in a bikini on the top headline of the Daily Mirror in 2004 and my picture and the headline, Slim and We Hate It. And then they took a picture where they wanted my face really serious, so I look a little bit sad. And I'm thinking, we never said, nobody in that interview said we're slim and we hate it. We said slim and there's the pros and cons, like I mentioned in my previous podcast. So basically what you're going to look at is the news will write headlines, but the editor always writes the headlines. The journalist is not responsible for the headline, although they'll know juicy sound bites that they know when they file their story, the tabloids or anyone in the media, but not Reuters. Follow Reuters because they're really good at giving you the news as facts without like the tabloid sensationalism. I don't read magazines hardly anymore. I look online, but obviously a lot of it's made up, like Closer, People, Heat. I don't think a lot of those stories are, it's always a friend said or a person close to the family said, and you think, okay. But it's just a lot of rubbish in the tabloids now, because I think the standard of journalism has gone right down since after the pandemic. I've worked with very kind of old school journalists and my press agent, and then one of them moved to America, so I don't really work with the tabloids too much anymore, because I think they've got a lot of younger journalists, and to be honest, some of them are really lovely, like one girl, Lucy, that I've worked with, but some of them don't get it, you know, they've just got a different mindset. They are the TikTok generation. Anyway, so they want to catch your attention, but they don't really want too much substance, because they know people will just think, oh, okay, that's not juicy enough. So basically, fear-mongering in the news, stop watching the fear-mongering in the news to increase your well-being, reduce your cortisol levels, and enhance your beauty. And also blame and victimization. Eliminate people who are narcissists in your life who have the blame and victimization attitude. Hopelessness is the next thing. This book talks about 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen R. Covey. And it's the foreword to the 2004 edition. Oh my God, it's 2004, the same year that I was in the Daily Mirror on the front cover of the newspaper in a bikini. Hopelessness, the children of blame and cynicism and hopelessness. When we succumb to believing that we are victims of our circumstances and yield to the plight of determinism, we lose hope and we lose drive and we settle into a resignation and stagnation. You lower your expectations to the point you're not disappointed by anyone. Oh my God. But that's me half the time. I'm quite numb to people. I don't react. I like to respond, or I just literally blank them. It's not gaslighting. I will blank people who give me bad behavior because they're not worthy of a response. But if you've got hopelessness around you as a person or people around you, it will rub off on you. So eliminate people who've got a sense of hopelessness in their life, because that's just part of the whole victimization crap. You are in control of your life, and I'm just looking down at the news that just popped up, see, pop up on my laptop. I'm recording with Riverside again, the Riverside online recording studio. Okay, so eliminate people who've got hopelessness attitude in their life. Lack of life balance. Life in our cell phone society is increasingly complex, demanding and stressful, absolutely exhausting for all for everyone. For all of our efforts to manage our time, we do more, be more, achieve greater things, be more efficient. With the modern wonders of technology, we obviously have more stress. So I'm just paraphrasing what the book says. Okay, so basically, this is the lack of life balance. We have access to technology, and a lot of us, I see people, we use our phones, we look down. I do this, like you see me use my book and I look up, because people look down and it's the most unflattering angle anyone can ever do. You get an instant aging face. There's no, you're not doing yourself any favors by looking down. But as an actor and a performer, we go, and we pose like this, yeah, like a dancer, always have good posture. So when I'm reading, I look up like this. So on the train, sometimes I'll use my phone, right, and I'll hold it like this, and people might think, oh, she video. No, I'm not, I'm reading. anyway, whatever. After the book, I want to talk about things in my life that I might have experienced that you've seen me do in the press, and I'll tell you what I was thinking and feeling at the time. Oh yeah, what's in it for me? Our culture teaches us that if we want something in life, we have to look out for number one. Life is a game, a race, a competition, and you better win it. Schoolmates, work colleagues, even family members are often seen as competitors. The more they win, the less there is for you. Of course, we try to appear generous and cheer for others' success, but inwardly and privately, so many of us are eating our hearts out when we look at other people achieve and be successful. Okay. So it goes a bit deep there. It's kind of gone over my head. But basically, I do not have FOMO, fear of missing out, and I don't envy people. No, I don't get jealous, but I might envy people. But within a few seconds, I've taught my brain to go, if you want it, go and get it yourself and work hard for it, because nothing good ever come easy, right? Okay, so that's that. So don't ever have the what's in it for me attitude. Just go out and get your dreams, like I did when I was a competitive bikini athlete. Go and work hard in the gym for 3 months. I competed for 4 years. It's my previous podcast. Check it out. And the mindset that you need is you are your own competition. Wow, that's a good tie-in, isn't it? And I would compete with myself on stage, even though I'm standing next to girls. Anyway, they would compete with me, but we were all kind of competitive athletes. So I've got a very competitive nature. I used to train as a high school athlete. In high school, I run for Great Britain as a teenage athlete. I wanted to be pro at 17. I couldn't afford, you know, to support myself. I had to move out of my mum's house. I didn't have my dad. I went to live with my dad for a few days in Essex. He used to run one of the army centres around the UK. I went to the stuff I wear. Give too much personal information away. Anyway, so I got a job within 3 days of moving to London. I've moved from up north near Southport. I was working at a hotel as a waitress at 16 and a half and at 17. And I was trying to retake my A-levels. I failed all my exams at school because they didn't know I had dyslexia. So I was very competitive in the sports field, but I wasn't competitive in the classroom. And to this day, I'm self-taught, self-educated. I mean, I did eventually go to live with my dad, and then I studied as a mature student, held down a day job. I knew I had to become competitive in my teens, but in my mid-20s, obviously, trigger alert, if you don't want to talk about SUICIDE. So I tried to take an overdose in my mid-20s because my brain wouldn't switch off. I had chronic fatigue. I was insomniac. I had insomnia, and I had childhood issues that I needed to deal with. And I just couldn't deal with the childhood crap that I went through because I didn't really have a proper childhood. Anyway, long story, short version is I recovered. Obviously, I decided to reinvent myself as Barbie in my early 30s after I gave birth to my son. I lost a stillborn baby. And so I've been in and out of therapy in an American way, not like in a weird way, but just in a kind of, I need to sort my head out and not offload on my family, because it's not fair to offload your crap onto family and friends. You need to seek the advice of a health and or medical professional to help you through it. So this, we're talking about 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen R. Covey. So basically what I learned to do is go into therapy, learn the lessons, put them into practice. And I, as a competitive athlete in my teens and running for Great Britain, I knew I'd have to apply the competitive mindset to my own brain to recover from depression, to recover from grief, to recover from relationship breakups, to recover from money issues. Because, you know, being like a single mom and working as a model and actor, the work was not every day. And that's, you know, afterwards, I've always worked, always held down my entertainment career and working in the day job, so to speak. But I always was into education and self-learning. My lashes are a bit sort of, so yeah. So be competitive, but don't use it against people. It's not a weapon. You should not weaponize competitiveness. You should always use it in a nurturing way. Of course, in the past, in my head, I might think, you know what, you know, get really competitive. Like when I walked on stage, I'd swear in my head just to get that out my system, because I was told, when you're on stage, do not smile like, you know, weak or whatever. Just do not go in like a Cheshire cat, but show them you mean business and you've got the nice girly smile as Barbie on stage, but they judge you from the neck down. And also just have an attitude of, I'm a winner and I'm going to win. Even though you knew you probably weren't going to win, you're not going to think that when you get on stage. It's a Rocky mindset. Dum, dum, dum. It is. So I need to sit back, shoulders back, guys. Yeah, that's better. So be competitive, but don't use it as a weapon against your family and friends. And always remember, there's always someone better than you and always someone working harder than you, blah, blah, blah. Okay, the next point is the hunger to be understood. Yeah, we've all had that. We all want to be understood and be loved and appreciated by people. But at the end of the day, if you take that too far, we're talking about like life balance. If you take it too far, the hunger to be understood, you can lose a sense of self, of identity. So, sorry, let me say that again. You can lose your sense of self or your identity. So when I was in a relationship, for example, I was a people pleaser in like my, in the early 2011, 2012, I was desperate for a relationship. And I do use the word desperate, not a good starting place to have a relationship. That's why it failed. I was way too kind of keen to hunger to be understood by the guy I was dating. We were engaged to be married. He was very wealthy. And when I broke up with him, it was because I saw a side of him, mentioning no names, that just was not compatible to me, put it that way. But I had to get out quick because it was kind of very toxic. And anyway, so I rebuilt everything. And that's when I became a bikini athlete, you know, to get stronger. And my friend as well, I've got really good friends in the industry who really helped me turn my life around, and I've been there for them. So we have a hunger to be understood, but it was more for us to prove to ourselves that we were able to achieve things in our life. So that's it. Confidence and differences. So obviously people share so much in common, but we are so magnificently different. Correct. I've always been like the odd one out from high school. I've always thought differently. From primary school, when I was six or seven, I remember one day I knew I was going to become like something in my life. I always thought I'm going to be famous, because back in the 1970s, when I was in primary school, fame was not a dirty word. It was an achievement through hard work, education, and success. Yeah. And talent. Now it's like a disposable word that people go, okay, another celebrity. But for me, when I was in the primary school, I remember standing in the school ground. Like, I remember it because it was a pivotal point of my life of confidence and self-reliance and self-validation. But I didn't know it then because I'm only like six or seven. I went, I'm not going to be in that group. I don't want to be in that gang. They're bullies. I don't like them. They're the nerds, but kind of the odd ones out. I kind of gravitated to them. And I was being beaten up badly and bullied at school. So during primary school, what I did to regain my sense of confidence for myself was I said, I'm going to be on my own. I'll just go around the field. I broke off a twig off a tree. And this is a good story, guys, because it was the looking back, it's like it made me into an athlete running for Great Britain. How? Because I broke a tree off. What's it called? My brain's going too quick for my tongue. I broke a twig off a tree and I went round the field and whipped my leg, pretending I was running on the perimeter of the field on a horse. And I remember the whistle was blown by the teacher and she's waving at me because obviously I didn't hear, I was too far away. And my school was bang in the middle of a country, a farmer's field. So I remember that day and I look back and think that's when it was in me to become an athlete. I could run. I just run. I was so skinny and tiny. Anyway, we were so poor that they gave me a Dunlop training shoe because my mum couldn't afford shoes. And we went to the Salvation Army guys to get clothes. We went to a jumble sale to get clothes because my mum was a single mum in the 70s, divorced from a father. She lost everything. My dad had a business. He was a turf accountant up north. They had a middle-class lifestyle. My sisters and brothers went to private school. And then there was three out of eight, the three youngest girls stayed with my mum. And then it was a boom in a councillor house. It was massive though. It was like a huge eight-bedroom house in up north. Anyway, so cut a long story short, my mum was treated for depression and agoraphobia and anxiety because of the effects of the divorce and obviously having a whole family split up because my brothers and sisters were very older than me and I was like the second youngest out of eight. So I never knew my big brothers and sisters and I'd always look at them from afar, like they were in the Royal Air Force, the Army, or the police and other professions. And that's why I'm obsessed with Army stuff because I'm a tomboy inside and I love everything Army related. I study loads of videos like Canadian Prepper, New York Prepper. And I'm not a prepper, but I do subscribe to that mentality. Like I will go without certain things that I don't need, like in my kitchen, whatever. Anyway, so you have to have self-validation and confidence. So we're talking about confidence, the chapter in the book. If you've got confidence from a young age, you'll still be insecure, but you will be able to compartmentalize the insecurities as you get older. I've only learned that through age and wisdom, which is what aging is. You age. Like part of my beauty routine is anti-aging, but also in the mind. You can anti-age in the mind. Maybe that's a really good title for the podcast, anti-aging for the mind. So start from a young age. If you can teach your kids to be confident and not worry about what people say, especially in this digital age, and not look at others for validation, be self-reliant and validate yourself. Look in the mirror and say, I love you. You're beautiful today. Even though, you know, you've got a few wrinkles, whatever, or you might want to lose weight or someone's prettier than you, taller than you, skinnier than you, or more curvy than you, whatever it is, or got a better outfit than you, a bigger car, house. It doesn't matter. Look in the mirror and say to yourself, I love you and you're good enough. and take that mindset to all of the relationships in your life. Because if I had parents teaching me that, which I didn't, I think, where would I be? But I don't regret or anything. And I'm happy with thinking that at my age now. So I can share with you guys how to be positive and how to get anything you want in life without obviously hurting other people. Okay, personal stagnation. Human nature is four-dimensional. Body, heart, mind and spirit. Consider the differences and the fruits of all the approaches. So you look at the body, cultural tendencies to maintain lifestyle, treat health problems, surgery and medication, the mind, culture, television, the entertain me culture, yeah. Heart, relationships for your personal selfish interests and relationships. Okay, so you've got to be respectful to others. Matters of the heart, obviously be self-validated, but consider other people and don't be selfish and don't be codependent. If you're codependent, you know, I'm not at all. That's why I'm happy single. Because then you kind of can mess up other people's life balance as well. Because life balance was the previous topic that we were looking at here today. Spirit. Okay, don't be cynical. Recognize being positive is a principle and how source is in God. So God is in everyone and everything. I think it was Spinoza, the philosopher, who says God is in everything and everyone. Okay, so basically keep in mind your own unique challenges and goals in life. But let me just turn the page, guys. But also do not like step on people's toes to get where you want to go. Just enjoy your life in the moment as well. And part of the television culture is entertain me. Entertainment should not fill gaps in your life. Like if you're interested in dating and relationships and you're lonely, switch on a happy romance movie. I usually cry if I do that, guys. But go out and socialize with people, but it's not going to fill that gap. So you've got to be happy to have an empty love tank, but fill it with other things. So for example, I used to watch Dating Coach by Patty Stanger, and she'd say, your love tank is empty. And I was like, oh my God, that's it. Eureka, eureka, light bulb moment. My love tank is empty. That's why I feel so lonely. That's why I feel empty. Well, it actually wasn't that. It was. But then when I found my podcast and learning geeky stuff, I study every day, guys. I study how to be my own producer of content, how to write scripts, studying as an actor, scripts, things that you don't even talk about in the press, apart from my beauty routine, plastic surgery, cosmetic surgery. I'm self-taught and educated, but I do have qualifications. But what happened is there was a eureka moment when I was watching Patty Stanger on the Millionaire Matchmaker. And I thought, my love tank's empty, but I'm going to fill it with self-love and creativity. So I fill up to the brim 150% my creative love tank, and then it overflows and becomes like filling the gap for my empty love tank. So I refuse to say now I've got an empty love tank. I've got an empty romantic love tank, but my love tank is brimming with all the people in my life, my beautiful son, that's love, wishing me well. I've got friends, and obviously I'm not really that close to all my family members. They're much, much older than me now anyway, because that's what happens. You get older, you kind of lose a bit of touch, don't you? You've all got your lives going on and you grow and evolve and you kind of move out of each other's life. But I was never close to him anyway. But he says in the foreword to the 2004 edition of 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, Powerful Lessons in Personal Change, Stephen R. Covey, and a foreword by Jim Collins, this book, just to remind you guys what we're looking at. He says in the end of the foreword, Stephen says, many people on their deathbeds wished they'd spent more time with their loved ones and families rather than those who they served. Remember, we all live under capitalism. We've all got bills and mortgages to pay, and we all want to achieve better lifestyles financially so we can be independent. And then time is money. For me, time is a currency. So if I've got a day off, I'm looking at those hours and 15 minutes, 20 minutes. I'm like, if someone keeps me waiting, I'm not going to book in to see them, a friend. I'd be like, you're running late. You're always late. Forget it. I'm brutal with my friends. They know. I'm like, don't be late, be on time, or I'll just go home. And I've done that loads of times before in the past. And now people know how to work with me to be around me. So I'm going to do this. Have you ever opened a book and you just open a page and read it as a lesson for the day? Let's do that. The power of the paradigm shift. Inside out. Oh, he talks about the aha moment. Oh, yes, we just talked about that. Very technical. Okay, he says, inside out. Again, oh my God, this is so the universe looking after me, us today. I've talked about beauty from inside and on a cellular level to renew your cells so that you can look fresh and young, and it's part of your beauty routine. But from the inside out, he says, attitudes and behaviors, he says, you've got to look at yourself from the inside out, basically, and work on the inside. So it will be, begin with the mind, Begin with the end in mind. People can't live with change if there's not a changeless core inside them. Yes. Oh my God. I know guys that I've dated who are so not interested in change. So they would like, if there's a romantic connection, they wouldn't act on it. They'd be like, oh no, I'm single, commitment phobe. Or they'd be like, oh, maybe in 10 years I'll be ready. You're never ready. You're never ready for a relationship. It's always just going to happen probably when you least expect it. And when you're not ready or when your life's in turmoil, you attract people who are meant to be in your life. I've got a guy that is my best friend, and actually, no, I'm not going to talk about him. It's not fair. Okay. So it says people can't live with change if there's not changeless. Okay, a changeless core. So if you've got a changeless core in you, how does that work? Does that mean that's... So he says the key to the ability to change is a changeless sense of who you are, what you're about and what you value. Oh, yeah. So I am Barbie, right? I killed off the old gothic image in my early 30s because I was depressed. I was gothic. I looked like a boy. I had flat chest. I was skinny. I was a model. I was attractive in a different way. So I killed off that identity. And now I know that I disassociate. I don't know I'm doing it, but I know there's a theory. So I can very quickly forget old images, old personalities, and shed that skin like a snake and reinvent. So all my life I've said, reinvent yourself and make sure that you are being authentic. Now everyone goes, this is my authentic self. Well, yeah, absolutely. That's what I do. To be your authentic self, you have to make failures. You have to make change. You have to be open to change and you have to have an open mind. A lot of people, especially in England, from my experience, not English people, but people in England, because we don't have a lot of good weather. And I'm sure that's a big thing. I think in my experience, people are not open to change. They like their comfort zone, don't we all? Some people have got OCD. I've got OCD, so I love my comfort zone, but I'm open to change. Like I said to my friend Steve, I'm ready for a relationship. I'm ready. I'm ready for love and romance to enter my life, but I'm okay with it if it doesn't enter my life now. And, you know, he's like, he talks about his own wishes, desires, whatever. And we're very close. I think we're twin souls. Anyway, but at the end of the day, what I'd like to say is this. If you are open to change, it will serve you. Like, you're serving people under capitalism. You are earning a salary, or you might have your own business. It doesn't matter which way you pay the bills. You're serving someone. Because at the end of the day, when you serve yourself, you have to be happy in your life choices. And I'm very happy with all of my life choices. So I serve myself first, but in the past I've been a people pleaser and I served other people and I wasn't happy. And that's when I killed off all the old images, realizing I was just trying to fit in. It wasn't who I was. I'd look in the mirror and go, who are you? I remember I used to be very gothic and looking into my eyes in the mirror and go, I don't know who you are, but there's something good in you and I don't know who you are. And I was on a journey of self-discovery. And then obviously when I had my son, I gave birth to a stillborn baby twin that threw me into depression and borderline anorexia for the first 5 years of my son's life. And I got to grip with it through therapy. I was an actor and model. Like I said, in 2004, I was on the front cover of the Daily Mirror in a bikini, slim and we hate it. And then it was a double page spread inside with my bikini body, because I've always had a Barbie bikini body going back to the early 2004. You can Google it. I've still got a picture. And one day I will go reactionary videos through like my old pictures. But I was like happy with my look then because I bleached my hair. And my hair was looking really good then. It might not have been 2004, might have been a bit later. I think it was 2004. Anyway, so I remember feeling open to change, but being happy with working on my face because I wanted to reconstruct my face, because being borderline anorexic, you lose a lot of fat pads on your face. And I just wasn't happy with the shape and I wanted the Barbie face. So in my mid-30s, one or 2 years later, I started reinventing as Barbie, and the mindset helped me because, you know, this book that we're talking about today, I might put it in the title, I'll just give a credit in the notes, the show notes. I think if you focus on your mindset healthy, it helps choose the right authentic image that you want to be. So, for example, if I didn't like the gothic, I'd kill it off and I'd bleach my hair. So this is how I did my gothic image change. I looked in the mirror and went, because you represent death and sadness. So a lot of women will cut off the hair, change the hair when they go through grief. So I gave birth to a stillborn baby twin, and my son was healthy and he had 70% blood loss and he survived intensive care, thank God. So I looked in the mirror, so I wanted change, which is the subject we're on now looking at this book. And I thought, I didn't actually know then. I just thought I'm going to do the opposite of jet black hair, because I used to dye my hair black. My natural hair is like a medium brown. I was born blonde and went dark, but that's why I can lift my hair to this. You can see my natural brown underneath. Anyway, so I bleached my hair. I got a bleach kit. It was orange. I had to run to a hairdresser the next day. It was falling off in my hands. I was like, oh, I don't care. I'll figure it out. She had to cut my hair boy short. I've got a picture. I'm so not interested in putting it on the internet. I've never put it out there because I don't like who it is. It freaks me out. Short, I mean, man haircut short. And she dyed it brown because it was orange. Then I had to grow it and keep highlighting it. And I was desperate. She said, we can't put bleach on that. It will go orange, orange, orange. Grow it out. You've got to dye it to keep the strength. And it was disgusting. I did a model shoot and I got work as a model with short brown hair. It was horrible. My God. Anyway, so I had to kill off that image. And as my hair got longer and blonder and I'd highlight it even more and cut the brown out, it was still short. So it went from bob. And I think I put extensions in it later. But I remember working on my face in the meantime. Do you know what I mean? As long as I got blonde around my face, which was the goal then, I was really happy. So it kind of lifted the depression by going blonde and becoming Barbie. And when I was in my mid-30s, my hair was, again, after I was on the front cover of the Daily Mirror in 2004, slimming me hate it in a pink bikini and looking Barbie fantastic, probably for the first time. I remember thinking, this is the image I want. So Barbie was coming into the media a little bit more then, and I never had a Barbie doll, but I don't remember the exact moment I wanted to be Barbie, but it was that period of my life, because I cut away from old memories, and I don't remember. I erase memory like that because I learned to do it as a child. So remember the story I just told you about running around the perimeter on like a fake horse when I whip my legs with a twig in primary school so I can avoid the bullies in the playground. I go around the country field because we were bang my school in primary school up north was in the middle of a farmer's field and I could see the horses. So I'm like, giddy up, giddy up. But I did it because I wanted to think about my dad who I never knew. And I get a letter like once a year or so. And he was a turf accountant and he was a bookkeeper and he loved horses. So when I was a baby, I don't have any memory of this. My first memory was like by the age of 6 or 7. I've got no memory, even though, rest in peace, my twin Becky, who committed suicide several years ago, she told me just shortly before she died that her earliest memory was when she was crawling. And I was like, what? Rest in peace, Becky. I love you. If you're looking down, I love you so much. And she's with my mom in heaven. So, or wherever we go when we die to the next dimension. So my mindset, so I talked about relating to horses again. I can't remember what I'm talking about now. That's what I do. Anyway, so yeah, I erase memories. So when I was younger, I started erasing my memories to erase bad memories. And as I get older, I look back like a year ago, I'm like, oh my God, I don't remember that. I can erase memory and like even a week ago. That's how I do it. And people call it disassociation and you've got multiple personalities. I've got multiple personalities. I know that sides to my personality, but the personality is Barbie, but Barbie wears different hats. Barbie's got different parts of a personality, but I'll always be Barbie, even when I go to sleep. So I know that I found the right kind of image for me. What works for me doesn't work for everyone. But yeah, if you want to dress up as Superman, go for it. If you want to do plastic surgery, go for it. But just remember, be authentic, be open to change. And even when you're getting older, don't worry about what other people think. Anyway, so we are looking at this book. I've come up to about 35 minutes now. Just to remind you guys, sorry, I'm just moving my camera. I produce this content, guys. I'm not going to make it so perfect, but any silences I cut out and any repetition I might cut out. So this is the book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen R. Covey. Powerful lessons in personal change. But you have to be open to change. That's what he said, isn't it? To want to change. People read this book, right? And you've got to be open to change. Now, books in the past, I've had this book many, many years, but books, and it's a 2004 edition. It's probably how long I've had it. It does smell a bit dusty. So I've got another book over there, which is called Sizing People Up, which is good. That's how I learned about narcissism. So let's turn the page in this book and look at another one. So I've just opened, oh, this is a nice juicy chapter. Let me have a look at this. The Principles of Creative Cooperation. My camera is moving, guys, because I've got it on my UGG boxes. So this is, he talks about Sir Winston Churchill and he talks about synergy. Oh, synergy is one of the key things of my life. I say there's a synergy to everything I do about looking like Barbie. Synergy, he says this, the principles of creative cooperation. He said, the highest forms of synergy focus the four unique human endowments, the motive of win-win, the skills of empathetic communication. I'm an empath. On the toughest challenges we face in life. What results is almost miraculous. We create new alternatives, something that wasn't there before. That's what I've done as Barbie, I reinvent. Synergy is the essence of principle-centered leadership. It is the essence of principle-centered parenting. It catalyzes, unifies, and unleashes. So all the habits we have covered prepare us to create the miracle of synergy. What is synergy? Simply defined, it means the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. It means that the relationship which the parts have to each other is a part in and of itself. It is not only a part, but the most catalytic, the most empowering, the most unifying, and the most exciting part. Okay, the creative process. I'm a creative. Is, you can relate to this, guys. That's why if I interject myself, it's because I want you to think, yeah, I'm like that too. We're on this journey together, guys, remember. So the creative process is also the most terrifying part because you don't know exactly what's going to happen or where it is going to lead. You don't know the new dangers around you, the challenges you'll find. It takes an enormous amount of internal security to begin with, the spirit of adventure, the spirit of discovery, the spirit of creativity. Without doubt, you have to leave the comfort zone of base camp and confront an entirely new and unknown wilderness. Ah, I love this bit. This is the essence of who I am. I love this book. Self-doubt is important. You have to change. You can have self-doubt, but you've got to have the confidence as well. Synergy is everywhere in nature. Oh, let me read this bit that I've missed out. He says, without doubt, you have to leave the comfort zone of base camp and confront an entirely new and unknown wilderness. You become a trailblazer, a pathfinder. Yeah, I'm a trailblazer and a pathfinder. You open new possibilities, new territories, new continents so that others can follow. Exactly. I am Barbie. I've been saying it for many years. Now in the Barbie movie, Barbie chooses to become human at the end. Now everyone understands everything I've been saying. In the meantime, I've been laughed at, ridiculed, poked fun at, trolled online. I've had real life bullies around me who, mentioning nothing. I sorted it out. It was fine. You know, if people are being nasty, just cut them out of your life. So, and he says, you are open to new possibilities, new territories, new continents so that others can follow. Synergy is everywhere in nature. Yeah. Okay. So the challenge is to apply the principles of creative cooperation, which we learn from nature in our social interactions. Family life provides many opportunities to observe synergy and to practice it. The way a man and woman bring a child into the world is synergistic. Sorry, guys. You know, when I speak my speech, because my brain goes too quick for my tongue. Okay, so he says, the essence of synergy is to value differences, to respect them, to build on strengths, to compensate for weaknesses, and synergistic communication. When you communicate synergistically, you open your mind and heart and expressions to new possibilities. Yeah, okay, so that's it. That was half a page I just read almost. So synergy, you can attract by being an empath, synergy in your life. So I always say, leave it to the universe. Thank you, dear universe, for all my blessings. May I accept the things I can't change, change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And in life, you'll attract people like yourself. So people are in your life for a reason. And if they're in your life for a reason, it means that you can grow together or you grow apart. And in my life, I'm choosing to grow together with the people around me. And if they don't want to be around me, I cut them out. Or if people, even friends, if in the past, not people around me now, but in the past, if people give me bad behavior, they wouldn't see me for dust. They just wouldn't see me for dust, guys. Okay, so we've been looking at the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, Powerful Lessons in Personal Change by Stephen R. Covey, the 2004 edition. We opened on the foreword and we've been touching on key points in the book. I always like to jump into chapters of the book and read it and then get sort of fired up and then go from the beginning. I kind of go to the back and read backwards. It's weird. Don't even ask me. But when I was at high school, I was dyslexic, but nobody identified it. And it was, so I had to retake all my A-levels, all my GCSEs, all my A-levels, and then I did a media diploma. So I have, instead of going to uni, I dropped out of my education. So let's talk about my education. I was on a law degree, university in London University. So I dropped out at 6 months. I wanted to be a contract barrister. And what happened is I was finding my true self and I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew I wanted to be a voice on the public stage. So I thought I'd be a barrister in a court of law talking to the jury, or contract law to sort sort out people's contracts because I was interested in finance and I used to read the Financial Times. So what happened is one day Synergy was in my lifestyle and people tapped me on the shoulder because the synergy of keeping an open mind to change worked in my favor when I was dressing like a boy. This is before my gothic phase. It was in my early 20s. I dressed like a boy. I wore men's suits. And then one day, when George Michael died, my friend phoned me and went, "Oh my God, George Michael's died." And I was like, "It's 7 o'clock in the morning." I went, and I said, "Oh, I'm sorry to hear that." She said, "You worked on his court case." So my friend Naomi phoned me when George Michael died, because later I found out there was a picture of me standing next to him in the Daily Mirror because as a boy, because I worked on George Michael's court case in the High Court. Yeah. And it was 1999. And I was dressing in men's suits, short, bobbed brown hair, no makeup, and I was very shy. So I wore a peak cap, like a Baker Boy hat, suit and tie, walking cane, and Doc Martens. I was asexual, but I was like tomboyish because I was struggling with my identity from late teens. So in high school, I dressed with a big white bow, copied the Madonna look, and I was like a China doll at school, pale skin, and I looked very Chinese with my brown bob and skinny. And I was an athlete running for Great Britain. And then I dressed like a boy in my late teens because I was like, my hormones were going weird. And I was like, oh, I had a bad experience. And I was just like dressing like in a tomboy nature. And it helped me not feel so vulnerable without my family around me, because I left home just as I turned 17. And I felt really vulnerable living in London on my own. It's like, can you imagine 17 is like you're a child? So I went through so many bad experiences with people and stuff, and I was figuring it out. So I figured it out. But I worked on George Michael's High Court case, and the synergy, to reflect what this book is talking about, that was around me was some guy, a journalist at the Music Week magazine, which is the Bible of the UK recording industry, music industry. He tapped me on the shoulder when I was in court and he goes, "Can you help me?" I went, "I'm not a journalist, mate." And I was really full of attitude. I was like, really like, what? Well, I was really shy and I didn't like to be social and I didn't like talking to people. I looked at the floor. So anyway, what happened is I worked on that court case for him for about 8 months. And then after that, I worked on George Michael's High Court battle against Sony Music in 1992, 1993. I think it was 1993 to 1994. And we got the headline, "Judge Rocks Michael Case." So I worked as a stringer, which is a freelance writer, not journalist. I'm not a journalist, but I worked with journalists and I wrote the copy. So it was me studying law. I went to the court case after reading on the Financial Times that George Michael one day was fighting his to get out of his restraint of trade High Court battle contract against Sony. So I was like, oh my God, I want to go and see, you know, law in action, because it's part of my studies, because I was a law college dropout. And at the time, I remember, that's it. I thought, I'm just going to put my law degree on hold and I'm going to do an online course in media studies, because I knew that I could write. But the law was getting really tricky with the numbers because I was numerically dyslexic. I've got dyscalculia, so numbers are not my strong point. Anyway, cut long story short, I could always write. So I used to write my own language that no one else could read. It was speed writing. I would write my own like court notes. And then this journalist who tapped me on the shoulder twice, one day I said, "No, mate, sorry, I can't help you. I'm not a writer. I'm not a journalist." And then the next day I said, "Please, I don't understand the law. Can you help me?" And I went, okay, so just come for coffee. So after that coffee, that was the synergy that the universe gave to me because I was open to change and I opened my mind up to help someone. But obviously the benefit for me was I would help him write his stories and it just felt right. So I did it. Initially, I have to say no, I did it. So after that court case, so I worked on George Michael's High Court case, the contract battle against Sony Music in 1993/1994. I worked with the contributing editor of Music Week magazine. That's when I found that I could write. That's when I found I could analyze legal argument in court. I watched George Michael every day. He smiled at me and he recognized me. He was like, when I say recognized me, he knew that I was writing for Music Week magazine because I was sitting next to a journalist he knew. He was, because in the music industry, you know the key players in the music industry. It's part of the networking, what we call networking. But back then, the internet wasn't even a thing in the 1990s. So it was the early 1990s. Guys, I know I'm a dinosaur, right? But so it was all about pick up the phone if you want to speak to someone or if you want to write something, like the magazine would have to clarify documents. So I had a black bin liner full that Paul from Music Week magazine in the 1990s when I was helping him, he gave me George Michael's contract, the witness statements I'd go through. I would comb through all the legal arguments and present it in facts to him so that when we were listening to the court case, he could understand it. And he still said, "It's like Chinese to me. I'm a journalist," he said to me. And I went, well, I'm a law student, so I can translate it. So we worked well as a team and I learned that. So the synergy this book teaches The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen R. Covey. The synergy, I look back and think, yeah, that was a synergetic moment. And then it led to more synergy. So after I worked on George Michael's court case, because I was at the press conference when he lost the case, and I knew Dick Lee, he his music publisher, and we worked together and I'd write stories with Paul. But I never got the byline, which is a credit. I was working with him and I got paid for it as a freelance law student writer. So that was my background when I knew I could write. And I knew my voice would be on the public stage, not in the music industry, but I knew I was moving in the right direction. So then it was after that high court case where I was dressing in men's suits that I became a little bit more feminine. Not a lot. I probably put a skirt on and that was it. But I was still dressing like a boy. And then one of the Reuters correspondent approached me who worked on that court case. And she gave me a card. Kat, who was the corporate finance correspondent of Reuters, she said, could you, if you're available in the future to work with me, I'm looking for young stringers who are like freelance writers to help them write and do stuff with them. So I worked on the Old Bailey Maxwell fraud trial in 1994, 1995 or whatever, mid 90s with CAC finance correspondents. There was two Reuters correspondents and I was helping them. So I was like a law student with all of these veteran journalists. I was like so intimidated. And I worked on the fraud trial of Robert Maxwell's sons, Kevin and Ian Maxwell. Disclaimer, I never knew any of them. And also I never ever saw or met Ghislaine Maxwell because remember there's stuff going on in the media. I don't want to say it, but anyway, whatever. But I do know that the Maxwell fraud trial was another synergy moment for me where somebody tapped me on the shoulder, said, could you help me and work with me as a freelance writer? Because I was a law student, right? So I needed money as a student. What are you going to do? Wait tables? I've done that. Didn't work. But I would write and get a little bit of pocket money to supplement my income. So I remember it's very vague now because it's so long ago. But after that, I realized I could write. So then I did an online course where you post your notes. There was no internet in the day. You post your notes to your media diploma journalist trainer. And then I got a media diploma for writing. So it was all about writing. And then it translates from writing into my voice and being on the public stage as the human Barbie in my mid-30s. So you could see the synergy was always back from primary school to the present day. Now, you can't have a journey of self-growth, new chapters, new dialogue, new narratives in your life only if you follow those habits of highly effective people. I do recommend that you read it by Stephen R. Covey. And I've got the 2004 edition, which is apparently the 25th anniversary edition. So I do try and be geeky without being geeky because I'm studying a lot of programming, like where I have to learn content creation, production, behind the camera. I've always been in front of the camera, but I do know a bit about being behind the camera as well. So anyway, guys, we're coming up to 48 minutes. So that's an example of me looking at when I used to work as a writer for high court and journalists. And so it brings me back mentioning Reuters. So that's when I knew Reuters would report the facts because in the media, the tabloids, I wasn't a big reader of the tabloids in the 90s, but it's only now looking back that I'm like, you know something, if you want to get your news, get it from Reuters, I recommend, because that's where I get my news from. If you look at the tabloids, it's fear-mongering, which brings me back to the beginning of the podcast. When you've got fear-mongering in society or the news or from the government, it creates instability in people and it affects your life. And in my life, I've had massive anxiety. So there's things I refuse to watch. Like if I go to see even a horror movie, I'm like, I'm not watching that. Turn it off. I'm not watching it. I'll talk to myself because I'm on my own. But if somebody wants to go and see a movie, like I'll go and see a movie like Nightmare on Elm Street or Halloween with my best friend Steve because he laughs. So if I see a movie, I'm like covering my eyes and then I'll look at him to see his reaction. He's laughing. He's laughing like it's a comedy. So I'm like, oh, it's only a movie. But in life, you've got to reduce your anxiety and you've got to just keep focused on what's right in your life to be successful and to have powerful lessons in your life to allow personal change to guide you in the right direction. We all fail. We all have hurdles. We all trip over and I've tripped over more times. I've failed more times than I've succeeded, but success is the best revenge. And success means you must be self-validated. Be on your own. Be on your own for periods, not throughout your life, but for periods to recalibrate your energy, right? And I don't just mean spiritually. I mean in terms of vibrational frequency. Because if you want your vibrational frequency to be of a higher vibration, You're not supposed to say higher vibration, but what I mean is if you want to be above the average, and it means you've got to be away from people who are average, who don't serve your needs of growth. And if people drag you down because they're lagging in things, if they don't have things that you have, they will pull you down without even noticing it. So be very selective, the people that you surround yourself with. I've hardly got any friends, and that's by choice. I've got a lot of acquaintances who know me or think they know me, but I choose to be a leader, which is another thing about this. You have to have a leader mentality, and you have to be yourself and be okay with standing out from the crowd so that people one day will see what your narrative is and join you on that journey as they're on their own journey of self-discovery. Okay, guys, I think it's 51. I'm going to take this to an hour. We've got 10 more minutes. Let me just check because I'm supposed to be going to a meeting soon. No, there's nothing there. Let me just check my phone. It's all right. So that's fine. Okay. So what I would like to finish off in the next 10 minutes is looking at examples from the book and how I used it in my life. So for example, remember I said in my previous podcast, I'm going to go behind the scenes talking about OMG, my Barbie body. This brings me on to a point that I knew I'd have to talk about without naming someone. A guy that I was dating at the time that I thought was McCann. I've done documentaries where people have appeared with me, so I'm not mentioning anyone, but there, this is a disclaimer. So there was a man in my life where, at the time of filming a TV show, it was OMG, my Barbie body, right? Where I won't mention anyone, but the guy that was going out with, peace and love to him. We were in contact a couple of years ago, just like to say sorry for how things ended, because it ended kind of with a bang where we just broke up. I left him and he left me and that was it. It was like, wow, no closure. But peace and love to him, but we just weren't right for each other. But in the documentary that I was on OMG, he was filmed with me and I did think he was McCann, and he is a very good looking guy. We just wasn't the right personality for me and I wasn't the right person for him. So for example, say if I was getting ready for bed and I had to prepare for my photo shoot the next day, it's not fair on the guy. When I'm in relationships, guys sometimes don't want to see me packing my suitcase for a photo shoot the next day, because if they're not part of it, they feel they're like losing a part of me. I don't know what that's all about, but, or they might be envious, or they might feel insecure, or they might just be like, well, I want to sit down and just watch a movie, just chill. But anyway, so when I was filming OMG, my Barbie body, the guy that was going out with, I thought was my Ken genuinely. And I made the mistake of including him in the very early weeks of our relationship, and I mean weeks, where I was like, yeah, let's film it, because a reality show will film and document who's in your life at the time. So he just happened to be in my life, but I really thought that was it, and I really fancied him. He was a great guy at the time, but then I realized we're not meant to be together, and we broke up because I said something like, oh, chill, take a chill pill, or chill out, and he didn't like that. And I thought, never say to someone chill out. Who knew? But in the years later, we communicated and just said hi and, you know, whatever. But I've learned lessons. So I won't film with a guy anymore, because if I'm in a relationship or seeing someone, number one, if you break up and you're not like together, it's just not, it doesn't work for me. So I don't film with any guys that I've been seeing. I haven't really dated that much, to be honest. But like, I joke with my friend Steve, maybe one day we'll film together. Like, he said he will do publicity with me, but he doesn't really want like people to know like the ins and outs of our relationship, because he's a private person. And I was like, oh, okay. Because that was like, really? Oh, you don't want people to know that we were, you know, close at one stage. But it doesn't matter, because some people just don't like their private life all over the tabloids or on a TV show, documented, especially if it goes wrong. But I'm convinced that we'd be in each other's life. Me and Steve, he's my Ken, my real life Ken, one of them, because I've got many Kens, even friends who are lovely guys, they're my Ken. Ken can be anyone, but someone special who really appreciates who you are. So I would just say as well, if you're doing stuff in your life, so we've just been talking about the book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, Powerful Lessons in Personal Change by Stephen R. Covey. And we're looking at different parts of the chapter, the foreword, and how I think this is good for people to think about as they're on their personal journey in life, and being open to change, having synergy in your life, not looking at bad news like fear mongering in the press or any fear around you where people create anxiety. You've got to eliminate your stress so that you can be beautiful from within, because the essence of me talking about this is if you have eliminated all negativity in your life or a lot of it, you will radiate beauty, because stress is a beauty killer. It really is. And this is all synergetically linked with anti-aging. if you want an anti-aging program, then what you want to do is have the right people in your life or don't have a lot of people in your life. And that's my choice. I choose to communicate with people from a distance because that's what works with me. And I need my solo time a lot. That's it, because I'm very creative. For me, I'm like a recording artist. When I'm in the studio like this, I'm writing. So my writing and my voice is my music, and I communicate through that, the spoken word. By the way, guys, my single Party Time is out on Spotify and Apple Music everywhere. So you can listen to it. I've got a little website called Here Now, but if you Google Party Time by Rachel Evans, you can listen to my song. I released it just before the Barbie movie came out, and it was just a kind of summer feel good pop tune that I recorded, and I'm really happy with it. So yeah, you can check that out. I think it's in my Instagram bio as well. I've got loads of links in the Instagram bio. So in closing, I just want to talk. We're going at 56, 57 minutes. So I'm going to stop this just on the hour mark. So the press that I've done. So when I saw this year after the Barbie movie came out, I was in the front cover of Life and Style Guardian with Mike N, Rich Pelly, and I was in a double page spread with five or six pictures in the Guardian, Life and Style on the cover. So they used many pictures for the digital edition, the print edition, and the online edition. And so I enjoyed working with Rich Pelly, like I said in my previous podcast, behind the scenes on three photo shoots. But one of the other photo shoots that I haven't talked about is the Hollywood Reporter. So one of the journalists from the Hollywood Reporter, she contacted me and wanted to write about plastic surgery Barbie. So there was me as the human Barbie in the UK, and there was the LA Barbie Marcella. And we're very happy with that. It was amazing. So we were in the Barbie, the only special edition Barbie movie magazine. It's amazing. I think I'm going to write about that. I'll do a podcast about it as well. It's so beautiful. They're talking about the Barbie movie, the Barbie doll, the history, and then they put real life human Barbies. Me, Rachel Evans, the UK London human Barbie, and Marcella, the LA Barbie. And it was a pivotal moment of synergy for me, again, reflecting what we're talking about in the book, because I knew that I would be on the world stage from a very young age. And as I enjoy these moments, it's a quiet moment of recognition for me, knowing that all my hard work behind the scenes, talking to the press, doing the interviews, doing the TV shows, the reality documentaries, even just going about my business every day, looking at myself and reinventing as Barbie in my 30s, all that hard work over the years and to this day, the maintenance that I do. I don't do a lot of surgery. I do maintenance. That is a validation. It's self-validation. But when professionals in the industry give me the validation and the applause by choosing to profile me, that's one of the biggest things that in my life I call success, is to get the recognition of your peer group. Now, for me, my peer group is not everyday people. It's the professionals that I work with in TV, in entertainment, writers, filmographers, producers. They're my peer group because we speak the same language and they're the ones who really get what I do and they're profiling me. So I'm grateful to all the people who have profiled me in the past. When you look at my Instagram, to come back to the point, you see the Hollywood Reporter is the first link. There's about five links. And I pay for the verification because you can put long videos on your profile and you get access to demographic and knowing your stats. So, and on Twitter as well, I'm verified on there because you can put long form videos. It's always good for putting long form content on all of the socials. But in the Hollywood Reporter, I really enjoyed doing that. And also I was in the Barbie movie. Oh, sorry. So the Barbie movie magazine and the Hollywood Reporter, a couple of people in America who wrote about me. It's in my bio on Instagram. And then obviously I'm in the UK press. But the last reality show that I did, which is Plastic Surgery Reality, it's a reality docu, they call it in the PR industry, reality documentary. It was Plastic Surgery Nightmares or Nightmares. And it was all about positive surgery. Even though they profile people, everyday people who've had bad botched surgery, I was the one representing good surgery. So that's what I always represent, good surgery, guys. So a note, then I did this year, I did Channel 4, the Snapchat. They've got 500,000 subscribers watching their show, which is called Standformations on Channel 4. And they did ask me to do a Channel 4 show because the socials are bigger than terrestrial TV. So they might have more people watch their Snapchat Channel 4 Standformations than they watch Channel 4 documentaries, for example, because it's all streaming, isn't it? So you can find that link there. And then I did also a couple of other online TV shows online streaming. That's the new thing, isn't it? for talking about being Barbie, which is so cool. And they put Margot Robbie in it and me. And I was like, yay, Margot Robbie, Barbie lookalike. That's what I am. Guys, we've gone over the hour, which is a pivotal point for me because I've always known that I've got to keep my podcast long and they've got to be like an hour for people to really feel like they're hanging out with me. What I'm going to do now is I've got a meeting to go to and I'm popping over to see my mate, Tara, give her a gift. And what I'm going to do is upload this probably tonight. So I'm going to edit it. So remember, guys, this is self-produced on Riverside, not sponsored. And I just want you to know that I'd love it one day if I could be in a room on stage with a microphone and headset talking to people about life coaching. That would be my dream. And being the human Barbie and people being okay with me being the human Barbie, giving them life lessons. That's what my dream is. And to have a book, I want to write my own book. I've got a book out there called Inside the Studio with Rachel. It's on Amazon. I self-published it. Everything I do is self-published, guys. I'm a pioneer. it's not like I'm saying I want multiple books, but I do want to, it's a hard work thing. I prefer the voice to writing because writing drains me. So with my background writing and using my voice, I can communicate like this is not scripted. This is from my head because I've got photographic memory. I've got no transcript. Even though Riverside FM, you've got your show notes, you've got your chapter divisions, and it will also allow you to write a transcript so you can look at the camera like this. Hi, guys. This is Rachel Evans on the Parody Podcast Show. And then it looks like you're just reading the auto cue, but you're looking at the camera. But I look off camera because that's what you do in documentaries. You don't want to be looking flat like a flat surface. You want to sort of turn away, you want to look up as if you're talking to people, otherwise it's just like frightened rabbit looking at the camera. So I think what we'll do is in another podcast, let me know, because I keep asking people, please let me know in the comments what you want me to talk about. But I'm just going to talk about it and create my own demographic, create my own market, and create my own success is what I've always done. So I'm going to talk about how to model and behind the camera and in front of the camera and how to do your best photos and give you tips on how to look good in pictures, because a lot of you out there don't like that. So let me wrap up the Parody Podcast Show hosted by me, Rachel Evans. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode, guys. Have a Barbie plastic fantastic day, or just have a great day. Barbie love and hugs. Bye, guys.